Welcome to the Austin Forum Upload, the podcast of the Austin Forum on Technology and Society. I'm Jay Boisseau, the founder and executive director of the Austin Forum. And for this special episode, we're recording on April 1st, we are heading into AI April for the Austin Forum. And it's actually our third AI April, a month full of AI activities. And so I'm very excited about that, and we'll talk about that. And I'm equally excited that we have the team that makes the Austin Forum happen here today. It's the folks from Visius, the company that acts as the management and execution arm of the Austin Forum. I'm here today with Luke Wilson, John Lockman, Adnan Khalil, and Mary Garza. Team, thanks for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
Hey, good to be here.
Excited to be here.
Thanks, Jay. Yeah.
Well, first of all, thank you all for helping make sure the Austin Forum on Technology and Society happens. I realize it takes a lot of work for all of us and a couple of others on the team who couldn't be here for this podcast to make this happen. And we make many events happen month after month, year after year, but no month is bigger than AI April. And now when I mention this to people, they think, oh God, you started that because of ChatGPT, right? And I'm like, no, this is our third one. We started this. We knew AI was important long ago, and we started this a few years ago. Before that, it's just gotten even bigger because of that. But really excited about to talk to all of you about AI as we enter AI April for the Austin Forum and the activities that we've got coming up. And then hear your thoughts on the state of AI. And actually, I'm going to flip that order, and I'm going to ask you first to lead off with just what are you excited about in AI right now on April 1st, 2024. And even though it's April Fool's Day, no April Fool's jokes on this. Tell us what you're most excited about in the state of AI. And John, let's start with you.
I'm really excited about the next generation of architecture for language models. An approach called the mixture of experts is an interesting way to sort of prune down to find expert domains inside of a large language model. And it sort of allows you to use really big models, but like I said, kind of prune them down so that you do a little bit more improved efficiency and better scalability, as you're able to drill down into a single, domain when you're asking a question or doing a specific task. So in my world, I think it's still looking at the really big models and seeing how we can use them more efficiently.
Does that then supersede what we're getting right now with RAG techniques to try to improve the accuracy of answers within, say, a company or organization's own domain knowledge? Does this go beyond that?
Yeah, it does a little bit, because it's really about specializing each domain task inside of your language model, mm-hmm. Rather than fine tuning on a specific data set or company's data set. And again, this is more for building general purpose tasks, but being able to do it more efficiently.
And I just realized I used an acronym, SIN number one in podcasting, using an acronym that you don't explain, but I said RAG and meant, I should have specified for our listeners, retrieval augmented generation. These RAG techniques are being used to try to improve, reduce the chances of hallucinations and improve the accuracy of answers by having some factual information inserted into the prompt itself. And so, John, you're saying this goes beyond that by including more domain knowledge included in the mix of models, as opposed to retrieving it and augmenting the prompt. Is that right?
That's right. You got it.
Cool. Luke, what are you most excited about in the state of AI right now as we enter AI April?
Well, just like John was talking about, you know, using smaller models in concert with one another to build, you know, the equivalent capability of large models. Mine's in the same domain, looking for smaller, more efficient models. And something that Microsoft Research published just last month is that they can take any large language model larger than 3 billion parameters, and they can get the exact same accuracy from it by doing everything in ternary math. So no floating point numbers, just a 0, a -1, or a 1. And it reduces the size of these models by almost 80% in some cases. And so I think these ultra low precision models are going to give us that next step forward. We can't all afford to have a truckload of NVIDIA GPUs to train our models or to run our models in production. And so having these more efficient, lower, ultra low precision models that can, you know, work on a smartphone or work in a standard server, it's going to be a huge boon for the AI industry.
And Luke, I just want to make sure our listeners get the importance of that. By ultra low precision, you don't mean inaccurate in the inference results. You mean being able to use the hardware more efficiently and not requiring so many bits of precision in that, which enables you to get better performance in a smaller size while still getting the same effective accuracy at the end, right?
That's absolutely right. It's all math at the end of the day. And if we can use lower precision math to get the same quality results that are sent back to the user, it's more efficient. It uses a lot less power, which is becoming a real problem with AI systems. Now we're looking at building data centers of such enormous scale that they are contributing to global warming by themselves. And so being able to get to where the math is simpler, the math is more efficient, and the power costs are lower is going to be huge for enabling this industry to continue to grow.
Right. Yeah. We used to joke about building a power plant to build a data center, but, you know, only a handful of, you know, large government places would really do that. Now I think we're hitting an inflection point where lots of companies are considering building things of that scale. And you know, optimizing like that is a really interesting way to do that, because it's not only reducing the runtime and the hardware required, but it's reducing that power footprint.
Well, I'm actually going to address that when it comes my turn to answer this question with some news from this past week. But before that, I'm going to turn it over to Adnan. Adnan, what are you most excited about as we enter AI April?
So, you know, Luke touched upon the reduced precision and how there is an incentive in the computational model. But, you know, I'm a hardware geek and grew up through the 80s. We saw a proliferation of different processor architectures and different instruction set architectures. And, you know, that was really a rich, vibrant period for general purpose processing. And, you know, the early 2000s and such, we saw all of that die down. But now, you know, with AI, we're seeing, again, a lot of interest in hardware design, you know, kicked off by GPUs, and you've got other domain specific architectures. And we're really trying to understand, you know, what these future AI models are going to look like. And we still don't know. And that's the best part, right? Because, you know, the large language models themselves are evolving. We don't have any standardization as such. We do know, like, reduced precision gives us better performance on today's hardware. But, you know, what is the future architecture that, you know, AI is really going to rely on? Is it going to be the SIMD model, obviously, you know, to some extent? You know, many cores, we already see that in a GPU, thousands of cores, we probably see millions of cores. But it's, to me, that's really exciting. It's this revival of silicon design and different architectures. And you see so many different companies out there that are producing, you know, novel ideas on how they can process AI.
Awesome. Thanks, Adnan. And Mary, what are you most excited about as we enter AI April?
Well, my answers aren't as exciting as y'all's answers. Kind of more on the average everyday user front. I'm excited that AI can help me automate my workflows and make things really easy. I do UX design, and there's a big part of it that's very human and psychological that UX or AI can't replace or help me with, but a lot of the little tasks and writing copy and things like that make my day a lot easier. And I think they help a lot of other people with that too. So that's what I'm excited for.
Yeah, I think it's certainly very interesting how people are finding ways to use these in their daily lives. And I think that's what I'm most excited about. I'm not speaking in terms of job destruction or elimination yet or anything like that. We'll come to our concerns in a minute, but I love the fact that people are using AI and they've been using it for years. They've been speaking to their home, you know, smart devices. They've been using it embedded in some of the applications they use that correct their grammar and things, but they're much more actively using it in ways that they're aware of when they use ChatGPT and Midjourney and DALL-E and tools like that. And so AI, I guess I'm most excited about the fact that everybody has an idea of what AI is. I wouldn't say that everybody truly understands it, but everybody is aware of it. Everybody has a basic idea of some of the things that it can do. And it's no longer in the background. It's in the foreground. People are actively using it. And that bodes well for people wanting to learn more and learn skills related to AI and how to use it better as a tool, as Mary just said, maybe how to get involved as a developer and extending the capabilities in software, as John and Luke said, or even improving the hardware capabilities, as Adnan said. So I'm just really excited that it's on the forefront right now. It's on the front burner. Everybody's aware of it. Everybody is using it in some way and aware of it now, and more people are interested in it.
Yeah, it's really easy to get excited about, you know, the intricacies on the research side when you've been doing it for years and years. But what's also exciting is that everybody's excited now. Everybody wants to talk about AI in some form of or another. And that's a very exciting time where it's actually touching lots of people in different ways, whether it's good or bad. AI is everywhere again.
Yeah,
go
ahead, Adnan.
Oh, no, I was going to say this is almost like an internet level revolution, because the other day I was talking to my music teacher, who is not exactly the most computer savvy person, and he told me he was using ChatGPT to learn Portuguese. And I was like, you know what ChatGPT is, let alone using it to learn a language? And he was like, yes, I discovered it, and it can spit out structured courses for you to learn, which I thought, again, it's just, you know, the fact that it's touched the lives of so many people and it's just going to, like, you know, get better and better. That's really exciting.
Yeah, you brought up another thing that excites me about it too, which is the learning potential. I've heard, you know, Elon Musk has famously said his kids are learning from YouTube more than books or things. And I'm not sure that should be the case or fully agree with that, but it is remarkable that YouTube has been such a great way to learn things for many, many years now. ChatGPT has become a great way to learn things in a different way too. You don't have to wait through a long video to get to the question you want answered. You can just directly ask ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude or one of these models, and it will give you the answer right there to the specific question you asked. It's become a great tool for asking clear questions and getting clear answers that are almost always right. So it's very interesting as a learning assistant in that regard.
I want to add one more thing to that. You know, you mentioned a lot of corporate AI models like OpenAI, with ChatGPT and Anthropic's Claude, and you can use Copilot from Microsoft Bing, or whatever they call it today. And there, what I'm more excited about is there are a lot of open source and access to open source models that are coming out now and being more prolific. Also, people are paying more attention to what open source really means. As in that there's a difference between when a company releases model weights only versus when a company releases model weights plus what data was used to train, plus how to fine tune, plus instructions for how to actually use it. And, there's been a lot of news cycle over the last year of, new models every day almost. It's really nice to finally see people start to take notice of what the difference is between these open source models, people just kind of making news cycle bits, what's useful and what's not. And I think it's really cool to see that you have choices beyond just going to, the large open AIs of the world, that you can run stuff locally on your own system as well.
Cool. All right. Round two. Now I'm going to ask you each, as we head into AI April, what is your greatest concern right now? And Mary, I ended with you on round one. I'm going to start with you here.
The flip side to what I was saying earlier about what I'm excited for with AI is kind of what I'm dreading with AI and what I've seen happen in the last year, which is a reduction in the job force. I think AI is becoming really helpful to allow people to optimize their workflows and be really efficient. So what used to take 4 or 5 designers maybe only takes 2 or 3. So it's helpful, but the workforce is having to adjust. I think business models are having to adjust. And you're seeing that with some layoffs in tech, I think.
Yeah, definitely seeing that. Know many friends actually. It's not that companies are advertising broad layoffs, but like they were a couple of years ago. But I know people. It is a trickle, and it's definitely happening. And I think CEOs are finding ways to reduce their staffing at no loss in overall effectiveness as they begin to adopt more and more of these tools, which. You know, of course, means people are going to need to transition to roles that either which they're the lead person at using AI or an adjacent role in which they benefit from it. But that's a long discussion for another podcast, probably. But yeah, that's definitely a deep concern of mine too, Mary. How about Luke? What do you got?
So the one thing that I'm really concerned about with AI, and I've been concerned about this for several years now as the hype has increased and whatnot. We as human beings have this tendency to anthropomorphize everything, you know, make it feel more human. And this is all my ongoing concern with AI, especially with these new generative models. They have this ability to almost, you know, feel like they're passing the Turing test in a way. You know, they can trick us into thinking they're human. But they're not necessarily intelligent. We've seen a lot of this in the news recently. Even, you know, very prominent scientists at some of these AI research firms saying that they believe that their models are becoming conscious or intelligent. This is not the case. Now, I just want to point out to all of our listeners that this is just math. You are getting a statistical distribution of most likely words based on some pattern of words you gave in as a prompt. It's not intelligent. It's not conscious. And we tend to think it is. And all humans have this problem. But it means that as we anthropomorphize these models, as we start to think they're intelligent, we start to trust them. And I think that's really dangerous at this point.
That's very well said. I mean, I think the reason ChatGPT got so much attention so fast is because it's the first AI that converses with you. And conversation is human. And this thing can converse with you in text and now with a voice interface to it. And that fools people into thinking it's human. But I am so glad you pointed that out because when my friends ask me the things I'm worried about in AI, the one that I'm not worried about is it being a general intelligence. And I remind them exactly what you said. Nope, it's just doing math. It's just doing it better and better. It's finding better patterns than before, but it is absolutely not human intelligent. Yeah, great, great
Absolutely.
point. John, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'd follow in on the, you know, Luke's point on trust and that you shouldn't have it. I mean, there's still a big potential for abuse, I think, right now. You know, as I said, hey, there's a lot of great open source stuff. That also means that things are very widely available. We hear about this all the time, that a company came up with a model and then said, oh, we're not going to release that because that's dangerous. Maybe it's dangerous to be able to clone your voice in less than 15 seconds. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's already tools that you can do that with that are already out there, and companies are just saying we're keeping that closed. I think, you know, being able to protect privacy, being able to protect from misuse of AI in terms of what happens during political times and people using deep fakes, you know, video and audio is really easy or becoming easier to create on the fly. So, you know, without having, you know, some sort of guardrails in place for people to live by, and if these models don't sort of live by our own ethical standards, I mean, that's a big concern for what will the future of these models look like as they proliferate throughout the world.
Yeah, deeply worried about that with dozens of the world's countries having major elections in this year, later this year in 2024. the potential for disinformation. I mean, forget misinformation and accidental repeating of errors and inaccuracies, but the deliberate disinformation attempts that are now possible with generative AI in text. Some people believe what they read. In voice, people believe what they hear. And in video, most people believe what they see. This is just it's a huge risk point in a year that so many of the world's countries, not just the US, but so many of the world's democracies have elections. And not just in democracies, it's a huge issue in any country for people that want to believe what is going on with their government, with their safety and security and so on. So yeah, we're going to revisit this topic in the Austin Forum in May, actually, in detail. But I'm with you, John. That's my biggest concern. Adnan, why don't you close out round two and tell us what you're most concerned about in the state of AI right now?
Yeah, two words, unbridled enthusiasm on AI. I mean, it sort of feeds on, you know, the themes that Luke and John and Mary and everybody has sort of put forth is that right now we're back into the golden age of, you know, we think AI can solve all of our problems. It's the panacea. And it isn't, right? I mean, people are going to, you know, we've seen a couple of AI winters in the past where, you know, people thought they could solve the AI, probably crack the AI, you know, problem, and they fell far short. But what I'm really afraid of is that, you know, when was the last time you heard about, you know, self-driving cars being the big thing? And it's almost like fallen off the radar in this past year. And what I'm afraid of is, like, you know, all of the money that's being diverted towards AI, which is very, you know, needed to advance the state of the art, people get disillusioned with what it can do. And then, you know, they look for another distraction and AI, you know, falls by the wayside while we look for the next shiny object. But, you know, it's the nature of the beast. You know, it goes through cycles.
There's a lot of next big thing in AI. I'm with you on that. You know, but what happened to the self-driving car? Like, well, I don't know. It's kind of self-driving. what about the delivery bots? I mean, well, they're kind of happening. There's trucks that are sort of driving autonomously during small pieces of highway. It feels a lot slower than the hype wants you to believe, right?
Yeah, I decided to use the latest version of the full self-driving software in my car yesterday. And I emphasized the marketing name is full self-driving, not the actuality. And coming back from the Dallas area to Austin using that yesterday in that traffic, I decided that my full self-driving, it actually works. It's kind of I'm not quite sure if I can use this word in a podcast, but it's kind of a dick on the highway. It technically works, but it cuts people off and it does things that I would never do as a human driver in that. And this is the latest, greatest version that the company that invented it is raving about. And it's clear that, you know, it can measure distances and it can do things like this, but it just can't quite adjust for manners and politeness in a way that a human can yet. And this gets back to Luke's point about anthropomorphizing AI. I don't understand why we're trying to make AI act like humans anyway. It doesn't have our same organic brains. It doesn't have all the things, same, you know, senses and things that we do. So I don't understand why we're trying to make the autonomous vehicles drive like humans when humans aren't the best drivers in the world anyway. We didn't evolve to drive cars. We evolved to, you know, fight saber-toothed tigers. So why not make the cars drive better than human beings and keep the LIDAR and radar in it and use other wavelengths and use other capabilities, instrument the roads themselves, instrument the cars so that they can communicate with each other. There's so much more we could do with autonomous vehicles than we're doing. And so I worry about this unbridled enthusiasm that seems to have permeated the autonomous vehicle industry and many others. So that's my little rant about that after my trip coming back from Dallas yesterday. Back to the positive now for round three.
That's dude, where's my flying car? Still waiting.
Yeah, would have preferred that. Yeah,
we can't drive in two dimensions. Don't give us a third.
I was honestly embarrassed. I mean, as an AI guy, I wanted to see how well it worked, but I was embarrassed at the way it would cut people off yesterday. So let's talk about AI April. We've referenced it several times. We have a lot of activities coming up. So Let's talk about the activities we have coming up for the Austin Forum in AI April. Most of them will be available online, either streaming, recorded, or both. So, John, the next activity is tomorrow night. Actually, I hope we can get this podcast out before then, but why don't you share with our listeners what you're excited about with tomorrow night's event?
Tomorrow night, April 2nd, Joey Davila from Razorwave is doing some hands-on AI tutorials, which is pretty cool. You'll be able to play along at home. You can use your own system, your own laptop. And I was also told there would be accordion music. So ultra exciting.
I know, Joey, I don't think it's possible for there not to be accordion music during this presentation at some point.
And it will everybody be- loves a, everybody loves a polka.
Everybody loves good accordion music. Yeah. Adnan, what are you most excited about in AI April?
So April 16th, we've got Paco Nathan, who is a managing partner at Durbin. And for those of you who don't know, he is a partner in this company called Durbin, where it's a data curation site for large language models. But what really is exciting is he's going to be talking about trends in the AI space, you know, and he generally has a really sort of interesting take on, you know, why certain trends are picking up, you know, which apps are also sort of taking advantage of these trends. So it gives you a real world feel of, you know, what we can expect, not just, you know, in the years to come, but in the months to come as well. So I'm pretty excited about that one.
Yeah, me too. And much appreciation for Paco for flying back to Austin, his hometown. He now lives in Silicon Valley, but he's flying back to Austin just to give this presentation live and in person, but it will also be streamed and recorded for all of our community. Luke, what about you? What are you? Well, I think I know the answer to what you're most excited about this month.
Well, a little selfish on my part, but we have a great event on April 30th. We're going to be showing Ex Machina, and then we're going to have a discussion afterwards with myself and several other really smart AI experts. We've got Maggie Engler, who's now at Microsoft, and Peter Voss, who's the CEO and chief scientist of Igo AI. We're going to be talking about the way AI is portrayed in the movie. What does it really mean for systems to be intelligent, especially in the age of generative AI? You know, I was talking about anthropomorphizing these systems before. It's going to be a great conversation about how it's portrayed in Hollywood, what the reality is, and where we're really going.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that one, too. We did the movie Her last year on its 10-year anniversary because that seemed especially relevant with the explosion of interest in generative AI. And there are aspects about this movie, speaking of the Turing test, which you brought up earlier, that are very relevant. It's the 10-year anniversary of that movie. So really looking forward to showing that. And I can't wait to hear what you and Maggie and Peter have to say to the questions that our audience asks after that. Mary, how about you? What are you excited about in AI April?
Well, it's on April 4th. It's with Dmitry Alperovich, and it's in person and at Capital Factory. Dmitry is an expert in cybersecurity and a co-founder of CrowdStrike, which is a cybersecurity company based in Austin. He's going to talk about America's position and potential in AI and how we can lead innovation in these fields. But mostly it's in person. And I think afterwards there's networking at the Driscoll Bar. So I think that's going to be exciting.
Yeah. And Dmitry is really going to talk about not just AI, but also the importance of the U.S. leading in synthetic biology and quantum computing and these other truly game-changing technologies that have a direct impact on national security and international competitiveness and things like that. So yeah, very excited that Dmitry is also going to be in town during AI April and willing to speak to us.
But I think Mary's right. The Driscoll is a very nice bar.
It will be fun to networking with Dmitry and others there afterwards. Yeah. And I'll pull a Luke here and do a shameless plug. I'm really excited to lead a conversation in our monthly online book discussion on the book, A Brief History of Intelligence, subtitle, Evolution, AI, and the Five Breakthroughs That Made Our Brains. And so this is going to be a chance for everybody to read a book that helps them understand a bit more about human intelligence. And it's really funny when you ask people to define artificial intelligence, if you then ask them to define intelligence, there's a struggle there. We have a hard time defining intelligence, period. And human intelligence and artificial intelligence are clearly quite different. And yet we can learn from the evolution of human intelligence in ways that have guided artificial intelligence so far, that may guide it more in the future, but that may also lead to understanding why they need to be synergistic and hopefully complementary, and probably never one making the other fully redundant. And I think it's going to be a really fun philosophical and future-looking conversation about that book on April 23rd. And I hope all of you will be there. I'm looking forward to leading that one as well. And these book discussions have gotten really popular over the last several months, so I expect we'll have a big crowd for that book. It is a pretty dense book, but I'm hopeful people will read it, or at least read a good synopsis of it, and then weigh in on that conversation. Any final thoughts from any of you, though? We're finishing this podcast at nearly 6 p.m. on the first day of April. Our activities really begin in earnest tomorrow with Joey DeVia's presentation. Any last thoughts, though, before we jump into the real activities of AI April?
As Confucius said, you know, may you live in interesting times. And it's certainly more true now than, you know, I think ever in the past of human history. So I don't know if that's a compliment or if it's a curse, but
interesting is the word. And I think that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of decades of hard work in artificial intelligence that are finally bearing fruit, and Everyone gets to reap the benefits now. And I think it's an incredible time to be exploring what's possible. So, you know, for everyone that can join in all the AI April activities this month, this is the year to be doing it.
Well, thank you guys for joining me, and thank you for all you do for making the Austin Forum on Technology and Society possible. Greatly appreciate your efforts, as I know the greater Austin community does, and many of our listeners around the nation and world. I look forward to seeing all of you in person and online as we execute all of the events of AI April. And I just wanted to thank you again and look forward to seeing you and talking with you about AI and other cool technologies soon.
Thanks for listening to the Austin Forum Upload. You can listen to additional episodes and check out a schedule of our monthly in-person events at austinforum.org. The Upload is a production of the Austin Forum on Technology and Society, a nonprofit organization here in Austin, Texas.